The American president has 4 to 8 years to lay down a foundation for history to judge them by. President's input is a combination of policies, decisions, actions, even the personality. The historian looks to assemble a factual presentation from that material to capture the significance of that person and their time in the Oval Office. My next guest continues his tradition of seeking the reality of a presidency. His latest work, along with the team of educators and historians that he's assembled, is The Presidency of Donald J. Trump, A First Historical Assessment. While being a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, he is also a CNN political analyst, contributor to NPR's Here and Now, co-host of Politics and Polls. We say good day to Professor Julian Zelizer. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
A couple of websites that are relevant to the professor's work. We have them at our homepage as well, princeton.edu, as well as politicspolls.princeton.edu. And again, we have those over at our webpage. So with a book like this, Professor, what are your priorities and parameters going in at the start?
Well, the first is to ask smart historians to lay out an initial take on how a presidency fit in a long-term history around a certain issue. So what do we know about how Trump fit into the history of immigration policy or the history of impeachment? And the second is to really start a conversation, to use what we have from documents and from journalistic reports to start to put together the narrative of his term.
And as is common with presidents, there's maybe a minority of the topics that that's most strongly connected to them. What was one of the, I guess, maybe lesser discussed elements or policies that you wanted to address in this book?
We have a great chapter on the high-tech industry and the complicated relationship of his presidency to that sector. On the one hand, the entire sector really thrived during his presidency, in part because of the kind of politics he was involved with. It thrived in social media and on places like Facebook. The computer industry itself does very well during his 4 years in office. But on the other hand, he has this very contentious relationship by the end of his term with places like Twitter and Facebook. So that's like an interesting area, wasn't front page all the time, but that provides some rich history for readers to think about.
When you look at the wider picture, was it more common for Trump to plug himself into something existing and take it further, cultivate it further, bring it down further, depending on the specifics? Was that more common versus creating something for him?
Yeah, I think most of the authors lean toward the first analysis. That's kind of the point of the book, meaning we're trying to see what were the foundations for what he did, what were the precedents, and how was he able to do what he did, even when he takes it much further than many previous presidents. And by doing that, we try to bring to bear the skills of a historian to understand these 4 years.
One of those prime examples maybe might be media, because Fox, OAN, they already existed. OAN was below the radar screen for the most part, but he pretty much first magnified and cultivated them. Then, of course, later on with Fox, he pretty much kneecapped them toward the end.
Yeah, and it's not just that they existed, but the intertwined relationship between the Republican Party and these media outlets had been building really for decades. I mean, starting with talk radio in the 1980s, all the way through different social media sites and cable shows that went on the air closer to his term. So when he tried to do this, when he used this media, there was a lot for him to work with, and that's important to remember.
Again, thinking of that concept, putting it into people rather than objects or outlets, did Trump give a home to a good number of people, groups, organizations? I mean, the first one that might spring to mind is our white nationalists.
Yeah, no, we have a chapter on that, and a historian, Kathleen Ballou, she talks about the history of these organizations, and we've seen them flare in moments like Oklahoma City, the bombing in 1995, but the difference was this was the first presidency where they or their rhetoric started to gain legitimacy in their eyes because of what the president was saying or doing. And so that's one area where the organizations are not new, and even their being in the conservative coalition was not new. But to hear a president refer to them or refuse to condemn them, that was an important part of the presidency.
Professor Julian Zelizer, who is the editor of the presidency of Donald J. Trump, contributor of the articles in the articles as well. Presidency of Donald J. Trump, a first historical assessment. He is also professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, CNN political analyst, contributor to NPR's Here and Now, and co-host of Politics and Polls. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. And just another aspect that you would, that your contributors as well address in the book is there are instances where, due to policies of the Trump administration, a human toll resulted. Maybe the most easy one for someone to grasp into is are the immigration policies.
Yeah, I mean, the immigration policies were pretty dramatic. He takes an increasingly hard line that the Republican Party had been adopting and then really ratchets it up in terms of the implementation of different kinds of restrictions on refugees, the family separation policy in the summer of 2018, and the construction of a wall. And those obviously had real-world consequences right off the bat for those who were trying to get in the country or those who were kicked out. And another example is obviously the pandemic, where a combination of the way his administration handled COVID combined with flaws in our public health system led to, you know, a horrible toll, horrible death toll that we're still suffering from.
Was the pandemic also a good display of how Trump, I call them head nodders, he wanted head nodders around him as opposed to people who would show him, well, that's your idea, but that's the bad way to go. Here's a better way to go.
Yeah, I think that's true. He wasn't a president who really listened to opposing voices, including advisors close to him. He wanted people around him to confirm what he wanted to do, or he was very good at ignoring people in his circle, like Dr. Anthony Fauci, who were trying to tell him to move in a different direction.
Instead, he turns to Scott Atlas, who the only reason Atlas got to where he got was because Trump saw him on Fox News, and Atlas agreed with what Trump was looking for.
Exactly, and that is very indicative of his leadership style, meaning he found voices to confirm what he believed, rather than listening to a multiplicity of voices and figuring out what was the best path forward.
Certainly, it's safe to say Trump had targets, some frequent, some infrequent. Did you also want to address in the presidency of Donald J. Trump how those targets responded, reacted, and maybe in some cases had to recover?
There's a really good chapter by a historian, Mike Kazin, about the Democratic Party and how it changed in these 4 years, and part of it's about the growth of a more progressive wing of the party that was responding to some of the policies Trump was promoting and some of his rhetoric. But what was interesting is that wing of the party became pretty pragmatic by 2020, and that's how the party landed on Biden. So their solution or their response to being a target of the president was first to mobilize, but then to find who was the most winnable candidate in the bunch.
Now, you and your collaborators actually had Zoom time with Trump for about an hour, I believe it was.
Yep.
Is Trump a listener, or is he more someone who demands that you listen to him?
No, he spoke to us. He asked for the meeting, and he spent about a half hour without any interaction really going through why he wanted us to understand why his presidency was so successful, and then he did take questions and answers, but it wasn't interactive. It was more him continuing to explain his view of the world, such as saying that January 6th was the result of Black Lives Matter and Antifa protesters rather than his own supporters.
What the professor and his collaborators have done, it's what history is supposed to be. It's a look at the reality and the facts as opposed to the hype and spin, whatever else you want to include on the opposite side. The presidency of Donald J. Trump, a first historical assessment, maybe not the last, as we've been led to believe here and there every so often. He is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, CNN political analyst, contributor to Here and Now on NPR, and co-host of Politics and Polls, which you can find out more about that at politicspolls.princeton.edu. Professor Julian Zelizer, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.